Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for joining us. From the Chicago Tribune, save some green through creative reuse. Discover perfectly good gardening gear hiding in home, garage, or recycling bins. By Jessica Damiano, the Associated Press. With prices for many things creeping up this year, gardeners shopping for supplies might be looking to tighten their tool belts. Before heading to the garden center, take a look around your home, garage, shed, and recycling bin. There just might be some perfectly good gardening gear hiding in plain sight. From lampshades to food containers, plastic yogurt containers with holes poked in their bottoms make wonderful seed starting pots. So do plastic clamshell lettuce and berry containers. Do you grow peonies? The plants are beautiful for about 2 weeks in spring, after which they give up and lie down on the lawn. I've seen peony plant supports selling for $10 for thin wire cages to well over $100 for sturdier, prettier options. But why buy them when large lampshade frames are the perfect height and shape to support the plants? Remove their fabric and place one upside down over each plant as soon as new growth pokes out of the ground, then bury their bases or use landscape pins to hold them in place. As the plants grow, their leaves will block the frames from view. Similarly, you can spend $50 to $100 for an obelisk trellis, or you can let your plants climb an old patio umbrella frame. Cut its legs down to size if necessary and sink them into the ground for stability. Use fish scraps. Fish emulsion is a fantastic organic fertilizer made from whole fish and byproducts. You can make your own by soaking fish scales, bones, and entrails in a sealed 5-gallon bucket of water for at least a month, then straining the liquid and using it to water plants. Or give your plants the same nutrients, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, calcium, magnesium, and sulfur, by burying a whole fish or fish scraps at least 10 inches to 12 inches deep under planting beds. If you're an angler, you may have access to a boatload of these amendments, but if you aren't, your local fishmonger may be willing to give you scraps and heads or sell them at low cost. Plants will also benefit from used fish tank water, which is rich in nitrogen and in other nutrients. Cooking water. After boiling vegetables, cool the water and apply it to plants as long as you didn't add salt. It contains vitamins and minerals that will give them a boost. Water from boiled eggs contains calcium, which tomato and pepper plants love. You can even use eggshells in place of garden lime, as they both contain calcium carbonate. Microwave empty shells for 2 minutes to dehydrate them, then grind in a high-powered blender, coffee grinder, or food processor. Incorporate the resulting powder into the soil around plants. Same can be done with banana peels. Dehydrate them in an air fryer and pulverized, they'll provide plant-boosting potassium. Making free lawn fertilizer is a zero-effort endeavor. Whether you use a push mower or a powered mulching mower, simply remove the bag and let the grass clippings remain on the lawn. As they break down, they'll release nitrogen into the soil. Also from the Chicago Tribune, free mulch can be a great deal, but plan ahead, by Beth Botts. Free mulch from electric utility companies, tree care firms, or municipalities can be a great deal if you plan ahead for it. Be prepared with a place where it can be dumped, as well as a plan for getting it spread around your trees and on your garden beds, said Sharon Isla, plant knowledge specialist in the plant clinic at the Morton Arboretum. You don't want to bite off more than you can chew. Electric utility companies and landscape firms that prune trees are often happy to share the resulting shredded wood with homeowners because it saves them a little money. State law requires them to take landscape waste to composting facilities and pay disposal fees. Every load of wood chips they share with a homeowner is a load they don't have to pay for. Some municipalities also share wood chips from their tree operations. There may be a standing pile from which residents can collect the mulch. A few municipalities also have programs to dump a load of mulch for residents. Not every company or village will dump wood chips. To find out whether you have a source of free mulch and what procedure you must follow, you will need to call around to your town or village, your local electric utility, or nearby tree care firms. If you do find a source, get ready before you place a request. Here are some tips for dealing with a big pile of mulch. Select a site. The mulch needs to be dumped from the truck near a street. Crews will not bring a truck on your property. If you have a driveway that can accommodate the pile, it may force you to park on the street until you get the mulch spread in your garden. If the only option is the parkway, check with your village to make sure you don't need permission. You probably will not be able to specify the exact date or time for the mulch to be delivered or the quantity. For more control, be prepared to pay. To have mulch delivered to a specific site on your property or on a specific date, you will have to order it from a landscape supply company. Purchased mulch will usually be more uniform in appearance than coarsely ground free wood chips. Mulch products are priced by the cubic yard. A cubic yard is roughly equivalent to a dozen bags of mulch, enough to cover about 150 square feet, 2 inches deep. The price will vary. Call landscape supply companies to ask for a quote. Spread it soon. When you place a request for dumping mulch, clear time so you'll be able to get it spread around trees and on garden beds promptly. In just a few days, a pile of mulch will smother grass underneath it, Isla said. You may end up reseeding the area. Share the mulch and the work. Consider inviting neighbors to go in on a pile of mulch. You can get the pile spread faster that way, she said. Everybody's garden gets mulch, and it's a neighborly thing to do. Don't worry about using fresh mulch. Some gardeners worry that freshly ground wood chips will rob their plants of nitrogen, a valuable plant nutrient. It's true that when bacteria first start to break down wood, they consume nitrogen, Isla said. But it's a small effect, and it soon goes away as other soil organisms get involved. It's not enough to harm established plants. If you are very concerned, purchase mulch that is partially composted and past the nitrogen-consuming stage. Here's another article from the Chicago Tribune. Make sure your plants are well adapted to your garden. By Tim Johnson. Here's a question that was sent in by a reader. We invested a lot of time and money in our garden a couple of years ago, but are concerned about how some of the plants are growing. Our river birch especially concerns us. What steps can we take to help our garden? Here's the answer. Plants that do not perform well in the garden can be very frustrating. I've had my share of plants that have failed at home, and I've found that the two main causes were not watering enough to get them established and trying to grow plants that were not well adapted to my garden. Different gardeners and experts can also give conflicting advice. This makes finding a solution or a course of action even harder. I will provide some general considerations for you to review and consider. A good place to start is to make sure that you have selected the right plants to meet your design objectives and for your garden's growing conditions. Choose plants with cultural needs that match the conditions in your garden rather than plants that just tolerate your planting zone. I see many home gardeners with plants that are not sited well for what the plant needs and how the plant grows. It may seem obvious, but as an example, sun-loving plants need to be in the sun while shade-loving plants need to be in shade. Autumn Joy Sedum prefers sunny, dry conditions, while a Stilbee prefers shade and moist, well-drained soil. Panicle hydrangeas are generally easy to grow and flower most profusely in full sun, but will tolerate some shade. Too much shade will result in reduced flowering and spindly plants. There are many different cultivars of panicle hydrangeas available, so choose one with a mature size that matches your space. Selecting the wrong plants for your garden's growing conditions usually results in poor plant performance and extra maintenance. Your garden's soil conditions will affect the growth of your plants, too. There are a variety of soil types in the Chicago area, ranging from sandy to heavy clay. A river birch can develop chlorotic or yellowed leaves when grown in heavy clay soils that have a high pH. River birch prefers moist conditions but can adapt to drier sites. Other trees are more tolerant of these conditions. Some maintenance practices can help. Amending the soil around the tree with elemental sulfur can reduce the soil pH. Long term, however, it may be best to choose a different tree. Avoid using yews and arborvitae, which are deer favorites, if there are a lot of deer in your area, or plan on netting them every fall. Boxwoods are not browsed by deer. Soil moisture conditions such as dry, moist, but well-drained, wet, and poorly drained are important to consider when siting plants. Choosing plants that are suitable for these conditions will greatly improve your success. Spreading yews do not do well in wet soil conditions. Yew foliage that begins to yellow is probably getting too much moisture. The common red twig dogwood is tolerant of wet conditions and easy to grow, while the flowering dogwood is very difficult to grow in Chicago. Good site preparation and proper planting techniques along with proper maintenance will improve success too. Garden sites around new construction often have heavily compacted soils that need to be loosened up and amended with compost prior to planting. Sites with new homes may have very little topsoil left. Trees are often planted too deep, but you should be able to see the root flare just above the ground. I like to plant 2 to 3 inches high in heavy clay soils. The base of the tree's trunk will widen out at the root flare. The root flare can be inches below the top of the burlap of a bald and burlap tree. The stress of planting a tree or shrub too deeply may not become visible until the plant has been growing for a few years. And here's one final article from the Chicago Tribune. Woodpeckers drum heartbeat of our forests. Welcoming birds into your garden benefits plants and other animals. By Margaret Roach of the New York Times. Do you hear that? The Avian Orchestra is rehearsing in anticipation of another spring with more notes sounded each day after winter's relative silence. In the percussion section, the male woodpeckers are starting to drum, proving their vitality by making the loudest noise they can, said Paul Bannock, a Seattle-based author and wildlife photographer whose latest book is Woodpecker, A Year in the Life of North American Woodpeckers. The emphatic drumming, meant to attract mates and drive off rival males, is by no means the only way woodpeckers are at the pulse of things. Lately, we've learned about the importance of making room in our gardens for keystone plants, native species that are disproportionately important to local ecosystems. Oaks are perhaps the most famous example. Were they to disappear, entire ecosystems could collapse, like how an arch would topple if its keystone were removed. But what about keystone animals, like woodpeckers? Shouldn't we intentionally try to make them at home too? Woodpeckers are the heartbeat of our forests, said Bannock, whose work focuses on North America's natural history, in particular bird conservation. In Woodpecker, he introduces us to the 41 North American species, ranging from the Arctic to the Caribbean. That includes 22 who make their home in the continental United States, all while also helping make homes for other species. The Spanish name for woodpeckers, pájaros carpinteros, or carpenter birds, honors their contribution. These are ecosystem engineers who apply their excavating skills to carve roosts for themselves and their offspring, many of which are subsequently repurposed as nests by birds as diverse as wood ducks, owls, bluebirds, tree swallows, and more, and by other animals, including squirrels, martens, bats, and raccoons. None of these would survive without woodpeckers, he said, noting that many animals have evolved to capitalize on their work. Part of the reason is the math. Male woodpeckers typically start work on several nests in anticipation of mating season, excavating each cavity pretty far along before showing the possibilities to the female who takes her pick. Some of the extras represent those potential nests for other animals. Plants, and therefore gardeners, are other beneficiaries, and Bannock calls woodpeckers the cleanup crew for their powerful organic pest control efforts. They devour termites, carpenter ants, bark beetles, caterpillars, aphids, weevils, and more. For gardens to come alive, Bannock said, that's the best thing we can do. Welcome the woodpecker. Strategic tree work by bird and gardener. An internet search for attract woodpeckers suggests that the best way to invite these charismatic, boldly colored birds is with a suet feeder, but Bannock thinks bigger. Though each species has particular dietary and site preferences, some general guidelines apply, and he has strived for almost 30 years in his garden to provide the resources and some habitat elements they require. Noting that most species are non-migratory, he stresses the importance of diverse plantings, which provide food for every season, and he makes sure to offer year-round access to water. In cold winter zones, floating de-icers will keep the surface unfrozen. Most critically, he practices strategic, often hands-off management of declining and dead trees. Woodpeckers, though mostly insectivorous, also include some plant material in their diets. In breeding season, fatty grubs such as beetle or ant larvae may headline the menu, but in summer, many switch to fruit. Native dogwoods, sumac, mountain ash, manzanita, black cherry, elderberry, various wild grapes, and hollies are just a few possibilities. Some woodpeckers also eat fruit we grow to eat ourselves, Baddock said, like apples, pears, blackberries, raspberries, and blueberries. As the season progresses, the birds will transition to eating more nuts and seeds, including acorns, for which the clown-faced, highly social acorn woodpecker is named. Groups of them drill holes in dead trees to create granary trees, their own giant acorn pantries. Nests in trees, or perhaps in bird boxes. Woodpeckers have an impressive physiology that allows them to withstand the strong impact of their own hammering. Various anatomical features combine to protect them, including a spongy, vibration-absorbing skull. They also have very little cerebrospinal fluid in their cranial cavity, so their brains don't slosh around. In some species, the long tongue wraps around the brain, which may give extra padding. Their ribs are reinforced, and their extra strong specialized feet and extra stiff tail feathers anchor them while they work. Despite the decline underway in trees, woodpeckers typically target. Excavating is a serious commitment. It takes, on average, about 2 to 4 weeks for most species to create a roost. The red cockaded's efforts may span several years. Too often, the gardener's instinct with a dying or dead tree is to cut it down. Bannock takes quite the opposite approach, celebrating and even creating wildlife trees or snags from dead or dying trees. I think we need to change the concept of beauty, he said. We have to think about not only the retention of snags, but the recruitment of snags in some cases. He once intentionally topped an old hemlock that had died, and he has identified which tree will evolve into the next snag. Not every garden has an ample supply of such candidates, and though making room for a bluebird box is probably more familiar, some woodpecker species will be grateful for a properly sized nest box too. Designs suiting the pileated woodpecker and northern flicker can be accessed in All About Birdhouses from Cornell Lab of Ornithology's Nest Watch, and ready-made flicker and wood duck boxes can host larger woodpecker species. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife offers downy and hairy nest box plans. Bannock has 3 boxes at his garden, and a trick for gaining the bird's buy-in before woodpecker breeding season, he stuffs the cleaned boxes with wood chips. The male can show his vitality by pulling chips out of the box, Bannock said, if not actually doing the heavy lifting of excavating. The bird lets the chips fly, hoping the female notices and joins in. Together, they may start something bigger than just the two of them, something positively transformational. From BetterHomesAndGardens.com, 15 long blooming perennials to fill your garden with color. You'll have flowers for weeks at a time with these perennial plants, by Cheryl Geets. Perennial plants come back every year on their own, unlike annuals that need to be replaced after the winter. The downside of perennials is shorter bloom time than annuals. However, you can achieve nearly continuous color with these long-blooming perennials that flower all summer long, and a few even produce flowers from spring into fall. Black-Eyed Susan. Black-Eyed Susan's vibrant yellow petals are a standout choice for any garden with its long-lasting, daisy-like flowers that brighten up spaces all summer. This hardy perennial is not only drought-tolerant, but also less appealing to deer, making it a low-maintenance favorite. To prolong blooming and keep it from self-seeding, regularly deadhead the spent flowers. Blanket flower. If you're planting a cutting garden, be sure to include blanket flower. This tough but pretty native perennial has showy red and yellow blooms from early summer into fall. It doesn't mind heat, drought, or poor soil, and pollinators such as bumblebees love it. Garden phlox. Leave it to garden phlox to bloom and bloom in shades of pink, purple, red, orange, and white. This fragrant beauty shows off its colorful flower clusters from July to September. Phlox is a must for a butterfly garden, and it makes an excellent cut flower for bouquets, too. Perennial geranium. With more than 300 species and varieties of perennial geraniums available, you're sure to find one that's the perfect shape, color, and size for your yard. Just be sure you don't confuse them with annual geraniums from the genus Pelargonium that are popular for pots. They're not related. Perennial geraniums bloom from early summer to fall and are commonly called cranesbill because their seed pods look like the beak of a crane. Next is pincushion flower. For a non-stop flower show all summer long, plant pincushion flower. Its long-stemmed blossoms gently sway over low mounds of gray-green foliage. Butterflies love its lavender blue blooms. Deadhead, this spring blooming perennial regularly to keep its flowers coming and the plant looking tidy. Hibiscus. Your garden will have color from multiple seasons with the tropical allure of hardy hibiscus, a resilient perennial that stands up to cold winters. Its impressive large flowers in shades of white, pink, red, and rose provide an eye-catching spectacle throughout the summer months. Ideal for adding dramatic height and vivid color, these plants are a sure way to draw attention and admiration. Clematis. Known as one of the most beautiful flowering vines, clematis showcases large blooms that last all summer long. These vertical plants are available in many shapes and colors. Clematis looks stunning climbing any kind of structure. Dianthus. Small yet plentiful, brightly colored flowers cover dianthus from early spring until frost. Even the tidy, grass-like silver-gray-green foliage has staying power remaining through the drab months of winter. Threadleaf coreopsis. The cheery yellow flowers of threadleaf coreopsis can bloom almost non-stop from late June well into fall. These perennials need to be deadheaded by shearing off old flowers, which will encourage new blooms to keep on coming. For a beautiful flower border, plant it with any purple or blue flowers, such as perennial salvia or balloon flower. Next is fall sunflower. This vibrant perennial starts blooming in midsummer and struts its stuff right up to frost. Fall sunflower is also called oxeye sunflower because each flower has a single row of golden petals around a darker yellow center eye. Daylily, number 11. You'll often find daylilies growing in ditches and fields as escapees from gardens. They're super easy to grow and produce glorious trumpet-shaped blooms in tons of colors. Look for ever-blooming or re-blooming varieties for the longest flower show. Catmint. The bushy, fragrant, gray-green foliage of catmint is reason enough to grow this beautiful perennial, but it also produces masses of small lavender-blue flowers from spring to fall. Besides being attractive, this tough plant is low-maintenance, easily grows in poor soil conditions, and draws pollinators. Salvia. You can count on perennial salvia to bloom all summer long in shades of purple, blue, pink, red, and white. Most varieties of this nectar-filled plant are very drought-tolerant and low-maintenance. Yarrow. Even beginner gardeners will find it easy to grow yarrow. It withstands heat, cold, and drought, and doesn't mind poor soil. This low-maintenance perennial blooms June through September and pairs beautifully with other drought-tolerant sunflowers such as false indigo and purple coneflower. The blooms of yarrow also make long-lasting cut flowers that can be easily dried. Number 15, lavender. Besides blooming all summer long, lavender offers fabulous fragrance. It's wonderful as a cut flower for fresh bouquets and equally good as a dried flower. This drought, heat, and wind-tolerant perennial is deer-resistant and attracts butterflies and other pollinators. At Desert Botanical Garden, Dog Days at the Garden, April 4th, 11th, 18th, and May 2nd and 9th. Time 6 to 11 a.m., price included in membership or general admission. Enjoy a Saturday morning from 6 to 11 a.m. excursion with your four-legged friend through the garden's trails. A perfect place to enjoy the outdoors together with some great photo ops. Dogs are not permitted at Gertrude's by Tarbell's, the RAF Gallery, Butterfly Pavilion, or Cactus Clubhouse. And Dog Days After Dark. April 1st, 8th, 15th, 22nd, 29th, 6 to 10 p.m. When the sun goes down, the tails start wagging. Select Wednesday evenings, your four-legged friends get their very own night to sniff, stroll, and shine at Garden After Dark. And Desert Botanical Garden is located at 1201 North Galvin Parkway in Phoenix. And those of you who are regular listeners to this show know we feature stories each week from the terrific book, Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. This story is called The Next Best Thing, written by Ann Peel Thompson. And there's a quote here from Danny Kay. Life is a great big canvas. Throw all the paint on it you can. When my parents reached their 70s and were having difficulty doing the things they had previously done with ease, a quote by test pilot Chuck Yeager became their favorite motto. Do what you can for as long as you can, and when you can't, do the next best thing. My father in particular was challenged by a weakened muscular system that would cause his legs to sometimes give way without warning. Ever diligent that he might fall, my mother would periodically check to make sure he was still standing as he ambled around outside doing yard work. One morning, Mom spied him lying flat on his stomach under an apple tree. Alarmed, she scurried out to help. Only when she got closer did she see that he had a trowel in hand and was weeding. Exasperated, she asked, "What are you doing?" My father replied, "The next best thing." That's called The Next Best Thing, written by Ann Peel Thompson, one of the many stories that make up Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. And that's the Green Thumb Show for this week. For Sun Sounds Radio, I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. Be safe and healthy. And we'll be talking with you soon.